Grab your selfie stick and charge up your phone, because next week, one of the world's most Instagrammable spectacles opens at the Institute of Contemporary Art in Boston. It's titled Love is Calling, and it's the largest of Yayoi Kusama's world-famous Infinity Mirror Rooms. WBUR Arts reporter Amelia Mason got a sneak preview of the ICA's new acquisition and joins us now in the studio to talk about it. Hi, Amelia. Thanks.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me.
So, I've never seen one of Kusama's Infinity Mirror Rooms. What can we all expect from Love is Calling?
Right. So, you'll walk into the gallery, and there's a big white box, like basically a room inside another room. You'll stand in line for a while, probably, and then a museum guide will usher you in and shut the door. Inside, the walls are mirrors, the ceiling is a mirror, and there are these neon tentacles sticking out of the floor and the ceiling. They're polka-dotted. And then there's this recording of Kusama reciting one of her poems in Japanese. It translates to residing in a castle of shed tears. Because of the mirrors, though, it looks like this endless field of polka-dotted tentacles, which is kind of the whole point of Kusama's mirrored environments. It's to immerse you in a space that feels just endless. Anyway, you'll have 2 minutes in there before they kick you out, because there's a lot of demand to see these, actually. When they put the tickets on sale, they sold out, I'm told, in 90 minutes.
So this really sounds pretty wild. And as you point out, these installations are pretty popular. How did they get so popular?
Well, as you can imagine, they make really good Instagram photos. A lot of them play with light and color in this way. They look like small galaxies. And if you do an image search, you just get rows and rows of these sparkly, incredible-looking photos. And that's probably why we're hearing about Kusama so much now. There's this feeling that the timing just sort of worked out. Social media is on the rise, and she really took off in recent years. But as the ICA chief curator Ava Raspini pointed out to me when I spoke to her, the themes that these mirror rooms bring up about seeing and being seen, these are things that Kusama's been thinking about for a long time.
You know, she's been interested in this experience, whether you call it narcissistic, whether one calls it voyeuristic, whether one calls it social. You know, there are many ways that you can think about this experience of sharing it. These are ideas she's been thinking about in the 1960s. And that's what I would say is why she's so influential. It's as if she, you know, knew about Instagram before Instagram was even a twinkle in someone's eye.
So take us back. How did Kusama come up with the idea for these mirror rooms?
Yeah, well, she's been interested in this idea of infinity since she was young. She apparently had these hallucinations when she was younger, polka dots in her field of vision. And she's always trying to recreate that feeling. And then she was also very interested in sort of these phallic protrusions that she'd fill a room with them or cover a piece of furniture with them. But this is very labor intensive. So she realized, you know, if I put mirrors up, then I don't have to make all of them. And that kind of evolved into these mirror rooms. So the first one was made in 1965. And the effect of it is something that she's very interested in, this feeling of sort of getting lost in this field of polka dots, this obliteration of the self, which also kind of evokes this feeling of cosmic oneness, you might say.
Why didn't it take off back then?
It's hard to say exactly, but there's definitely a feeling she was overshadowed by her white male counterparts. She was in the avant-garde scene in the 60s in New York City. She rubbed shoulders with pop art luminaries like Andy Warhol, Klaus Oldenburg. She actually claimed some of them stole her ideas. But she didn't ever quite rise to their level, even though she did have a fair bit of success. And she eventually went back to Japan. So she's been making art and working since then, having a lower profile until more recently. And now that there's all this attention on her, I think people are realizing how relevant her work was at the time in the 60s, even then. You know, I think she was really tapped into the zeitgeist, which is something that Ava Raspini talked to me about as well.
Virtually every art movement of the 20th century, whether you think about pop art, minimalism, performance art, feminist art, she is kind of the forebearer, of the grandmother, if you will, of many of these movements. And I think we wouldn't see a lot of the art that we see today without Kusama.
So I think in this case, the ICA's mission is really to also contextualize her work, you know, and make a case for her importance in contemporary art. So there's a companion exhibit next to the mirror room, and it tries to tie her work to other artists' work who've sort of come after her. For example, Nick Cave, who makes these very, very elaborate, dense, detailed, colorful sculptures. And I think you can really see the echoes of Kusama in his work.
So for the ICA, what's the acquisition of this Kusama work mean for it?
I think it's a huge huge coup for the ICA. I mean, they haven't actually had a permanent collection until pretty recently in 2006 when they moved to their current location in the waterfront. And so this is going to be like a big anchor for their permanent collection. And I think they really hope that it'll attract new audiences because it's just so popular.
Well, it sounds like it'll be a lot of fun to visit, but what are the chances that I or anyone else will actually be able to get in to see it?
Yeah, you'll have to be a bit vigilant. The next round of tickets go on sale to ICA members on October 8th and to the general public on October 15th. And they do sell out really fast, but there will be a number of chances. It will be up for quite some time.
WBUR Arts reporter Amelia Mason, thanks a lot for coming in. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me.